Cambridge Certificate in Advanced English 5 by the University of Cambridge ESOL Examinations in conjunction with Cambridge University Press. This recording is copyright. CD 1. This is the Cambridge Certificate in Advanced English Listening Test. Test 1. This paper requires you to listen to a selection of recorded material and answer the accompanying questions. There are four parts to the test. You will hear part two once only. All the other parts of the test will be heard twice. There will be a pause before each part to allow you to look through the questions, and other pauses to let you think about your answers. At the end of every pause, you will hear this sound. You should write your answers in the spaces provided on the question paper. You will have 10 minutes at the end to transfer your answers to the separate answer sheet. There will now be a pause. You must ask any questions now, as you will not be allowed to speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part one. You will hear a talk given by a woman who is a successful climber. For questions 1 to 10, complete the sentences. You will hear the recording twice. You now have 30 seconds to look at part 1.
People often ask me when I was first bitten by the climbing bug. Well, it happened when, as a journalist, I accompanied an Anglo-American expedition on Everest's northeast ridge in 1989. I went there with no intention other than to write about other people climbing the mountain. I wanted to see what made mountaineers tick, why they gave up jobs and left their families just to climb a hill. Over the couple of months I spent with the expedition, I began to understand the sense of freedom and achievement of mountaineering and did lots of learning and exploration. I think they were the happiest 2 months of my life. Over the next 3.5 years, I honed my newly acquired climbing skills on various mountains all over the world. People say, "Weren't your family surprised by this new interest?" Well, they weren't, because I'd already done numerous other, what people like to call, adventure sports, like hang gliding and scuba diving. Anyway, in 1993, my hobby got completely out of hand. I gave up my job, let out my flat, and joined the British Everest expedition. To prepare physically for it, I trained at my local gym. The mental preparation, however, was much more difficult. There were lots of things that frightened me about Everest. One of them was the ice fall that you have to climb through. A friend asked if there was any way I could prepare myself for it. I thought, what can I do? Put myself in a fridge and look at lumps of ice? Everest is certainly not a place for cowards, and it's also certainly not a place for life's luxuries. You don't carry anything that isn't necessary because weight multiplies at high altitudes. The first time I went to Everest, as a journalist, I carried my perfume all the way. I soon realised that it was unnecessary. You can forget baths and showers on a mountain as well. I didn't even take my toothbrush higher than 7,000 metres. It's not through uncleanliness or laziness that you don't wash. It's through sheer practicality. The only source of water is melted snow. To melt snow, you need fuel, and fuel is heavy, so you don't melt snow unless you're going to drink it. The question I'm asked most often is, how did you feel when you reached the summit? Well, I still get emotional when I think about it. It was fabulous, because neither of the two Sherpas with me had been to the top before either. There was this tremendous feeling of shared excitement. Yes. Since then, I've gone on to climb a number of other summits, and I plan to tackle Mount Fuji later this year. And, of course, I've got my new career in TV as a presenter on Tomorrow's World. Mm. I'm in demand on the lecturing circuit, and my book about my ascent of Everest, On Top of the World, is a bestseller. So that's my story. Now, does anybody have any questions?
Now you will hear the recording again.
People often ask me when I was first bitten by the climbing bug. Well, it happened when, as a journalist, I accompanied an Anglo-American expedition on Everest's northeast ridge in 1989. I went there with no intention other than to write about other people climbing the mountain. I wanted to see what made mountaineers tick, why they gave up jobs and left their families just to climb a hill. Over the couple of months I spent with the expedition, I began to understand the sense of freedom and achievement of mountaineering and did lots of learning and exploration. I think they were the happiest 2 months of my life. Over the next 3.5 years, I honed my newly acquired climbing skills on various mountains all over the world. People say, weren't your family surprised by this new interest? Well, they weren't, because I'd already done numerous other, what people like to call, adventure sports, like hang gliding and scuba diving. Anyway, in 1993, my hobby got completely out of hand. I gave up my job, let out my flat, and joined the British Everest expedition. To prepare physically for it, I trained at my local gym. The mental preparation, however, was much more difficult. There were lots of things that frightened me about Everest. One of them was the ice fall that you have to climb through. A friend asked if there was any way I could prepare myself for it. I thought, what can I do? Put myself in a fridge and look at lumps of ice? Everest is certainly not a place for cowards, and it's also certainly not a place for life's luxuries. You don't carry anything that isn't necessary because weight multiplies at high altitudes. The first time I went to Everest, as a journalist, I carried my perfume all the way. I soon realised that it was unnecessary. You can forget baths and showers on a mountain as well. I didn't even take my toothbrush higher than 7,000 metres. It's not through uncleanliness or laziness that you don't wash. It's through sheer practicality. The only source of water is melted snow. To melt snow, you need fuel. And fuel is heavy, so you don't melt snow unless you're going to drink it. The question I'm asked most often is, how did you feel when you reached the summit? Well, I still get emotional when I think about it. It was fabulous, because neither of the two Sherpas with me had been to the top before either. There was this tremendous feeling of shared excitement. Since then, I've gone on to climb a number of other summits, and I plan to tackle Mount Fuji later this year. And, of course, I've got my new career in TV as a presenter on Tomorrow's World. Mm. I'm in demand on the lecturing circuit, and my book about my ascent of Everest, On Top of the World, is a bestseller. So that's my story. Now, does anybody have any questions?
That is the end of part one.